Hello, and welcome to Art Table's podcast series, Artist Perspectives. I'm Jessica Porter, Art Table's Executive Director, and I'm looking forward to sharing this series with you. Since 1980, Art Table is the leading professional organization devoted to supporting women in the visual arts. Art Table's Artist Perspectives podcast puts Art Table members in conversation with women artists at the forefront of their practice.
Samantha D'Attilio is a curator, art historian, and writer of modern and contemporary art made from glass, fibers, clay, wood, and metals. She is committed to illuminating feminist histories and critically subverting the art historical canon. Currently, Samantha is the assistant curator at the Museum of Art and Design in New York. Beth Lippman is a contemporary artist working in glass. She is best known for her glass still life compositions, which reference the work of 16th and 17th century European painters. Samantha and Beth are working together on Beth's upcoming exhibition at the Museum of Art and Design. During this conversation, you'll hear the two of them talk through the artist and curatorial process of creating such an institutional exhibition. Then, to an honest reflection and critique of each other's practice and the ethics of producing resource-heavy duty artworks that employ industrial techniques in a way that is sustainable and climate conscious. To hear these two grapple with their complicated reliance on material culture is both inspirational and relevant when thinking about art making today.
Samantha, I'm thrilled to be sitting here talking to you. I always love talking to you, so.
Thank you. Yeah, I love talking to you, too. Mm-hmm. I think even before we had a chance to meet, I was so drawn to your work because we seem to have so many common interests that it just immediately speaks to me. Mm. And I think one of the things that's so fascinating, the more conversations we have, is just this element of time that is so ingrained in everything that you do and how important time feels to us right now as a society.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think I've formalized it and even actualized, like, oh, I'm all of this work is about time. It was not the first door I walked through consciously when I was starting to make the work. But it is the core of my interests because I'm constantly trying to figure out what it means to be where we are at this moment in time. And it's been fascinating to even see how our time has been redefined and codified now as well. Like now we're in the age of the Anthropocene, which, you know, most people have heard of, but 5 years ago, no one knew what that term meant even, you know, just 5 years ago. And then thinking about just, yeah, how technology has changed so quickly so that time has changed in relation to technology. But I think when I was very young, I had a sense of mortality. Really, from a very early age, I lost friends in first grade and then, you know, more friends later on in elementary school. And it was just this kind of urgency and this kind of sense of finitude of life that I just kind of grasped that at an early age. And so I definitely think that when it came time to start formally making things or intentionally making things, that was, I mean, it definitely gave a sense of urgency to what I was doing, but it was also the thing that I kept trying to understand and continue to try to understand in the work as I get older in time. I mean, it's so cliche, but it's like, it does speed up, actually. That is accurate, you know? So, I think there's so many layers, whether it's like a personal understanding of time or like a societal understanding of time, where we are currently, how the news kind of bombards us every single day. If you happen to be paying attention to how extremely, you know, cataclysmic this time is that we're living through and what could happen tomorrow, that like that urgency of knowing that, anything could happen at any given moment, you know, that I do feel, I don't know, do you feel that way? Like we're living on the edge of our seat waiting to see, you know, like maybe we won't be here tomorrow.
I do. I think it really feels like every decision that we make is so important now. there are no lighthearted decisions, it feels, when it comes to greater social issues. And I think it can also be thought about in the perspective of the legacy that we want to leave as individuals, but as people, in terms of the relationship to our planet, as you were saying before, with the age of the Anthropocene and what that means to us. And I think it's interesting to think about time in relation to the finality of the end of our time here, but also in terms of that kind of living legacy, what we have contributed that stays behind, but also just the constant question of what comes next. Every kind of society and religion and spiritual practice has always thought about what comes next and how does that influence what we do here and how much we make or preserve interactions in that way.
Do you think it still matters? I mean, I can think we're both sitting here having this conversation because obviously on some level we think it matters, that, and so we continue to make and manifest things. But I am curious about that question also of, like, does it matter? Like, is it a futile pursuit at this point? Because even
the work
though,
that we do.
Yeah, and making things also, you know, on some level, like, historically, yes. Our species has done that. Mm-hmm. Is it? Does it still make sense to do that now? I mean, of course, because it's in our nature, right? But so on one level, we know the answer. That's one answer. But, like, all of the different pieces of that puzzle has changed in the way that it fits together also.
It's such a good question. And I think about it all the time in terms of what I do as a curator or work in museums and making exhibitions. And the inherent waste that goes into this field that we're part of, but also how important that creation is, that ability to transcend so much through the artworks that you make and that I have the joy to bring into the museum and share with people. I don't know. It might sound so corny, but I truly believe that we have such an opportunity to make change with what we do. And it's a hard... I find myself thinking about it sometimes. I'm like, in this world where there's so much tragedy happening, am I doing the most that I can do by choosing to participate in this world? And then I think about it, and I really, truly believe that it's important work that we do. Mm-hmm.
I will also say, like, I, for years now, have felt the enormity of actually working in really resource-intensive materials. And just, I think my inherent state has, like, a level of guilt at any given time anyway.
Me too.
It's a good thing to, you know, it's like, oh, I should feel, you know, I feel this sense of, like, of... responsibility. Like, every time I go, I turn on the furnace, I start to make something. It's like, it is in some level hypocritical to be talking about climate change and, you know, the kind of, the enormity of the age that we're living in, the enormity of the activism that we need is not necessarily, like, I'm illustrating it with things that are heavily resource intensive. So I'm using materials that require resource intensive materials. And so every time I go back into the studio and I continue to express myself in a way that I've been expressing myself, even though it manifests differently because it's, you know, it unfolds and evolves. But I'm, you know, it's like, should I be doing this again? Should I be doing something else instead?
Do you have those experiences with people, or have you had you...
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. I I think our roles are so very different in that way.
Yeah.
Because I will work in my studio, you know, making something, and or maybe I'll work with a few other people as well, because I do work with others, because there's so many parts to the assemblages that I create. But then when it's finished and I put it out in the world, I very rarely, you know, am in dialogue with people outside. So the work has its own life. And, you know, my hope is that it resonates and that the materiality is a tool that can be used to bring people in and engage. Although I will say, I think probably a percentage of people are totally repelled by the kind of beauty of the material too, depending upon their preconceived notions of what, you know,
sure,
art should be, even mm-hmm. like outside of the material.
You I know, didn't
like,
even want to bring that up.
Of course. Here we are. But so I think for many people it brings them in, and it provides a sense of wonder, and I hope that they stay in that spot and start to, you know, observe and possibly think about the composition and what they're being confronted with. But I also think some people just maybe see it, especially probably like, I would say, yeah, maybe people within our community, because the material is still ostracized to a certain extent. Yeah, I mean, I do think it's a valuable tool. And I do think, I've been thinking a lot lately about how materials reveal themselves to us as individuals, and also over time. Like, I think there are other materials that are as seductive to me now as glass can be for many, many, many people. Mm-hmm. It takes time sometimes to really understand what's pulling you and what you're either feeling or thinking in relation to the objects around you. And I'm really fascinated by that kind of minutia of information that's like slowly being dripped out of everything that we surround ourselves by, and how that impacts us on a kind of on a daily basis. So I know that, like, on some level, like, the work that I make in glass is very accessible to the majority of people. And I do that intentionally, because I do want it to have a visceral effect immediately. That's really important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that there's so much to unpack in all the different kinds of materials that we choose to work with or not work with, mm-hmm. for various reasons. But I think, yeah, it's such a tough topic.
What is specifically the glassy topic?
The glass.
I think I know what you're talking about. I didn't necessarily want to
bring it up, because when I think of your work, I don't think of glass, because mm-hmm. you also work in video and photography, right. and cast metals yeah. and ceramics yeah. and everything. Yeah. And there's no way that I would want to define you. And what is most attractive to me about your work is the intellectual rigor that's really behind it, and mm-hmm. your curiosity in discovering all of these different sources, and the way you really infuse the work with that. I think mm-hmm. a lot of artists are looking to a variety of sources, but you don't necessarily see it come through in the work in the same mm-hmm. way that it does with you. So I don't know. For someone like me, it is so appealing. It drives my curiosity as well. And one of my favorite things about our conversations, or I find our conversations to be so enriching, because I'm always going home and looking up some book or some podcast or some source, or thinking more about the conversations that we're having. And that's what I love to find in your work as well.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I think that the relationship we have is really kind of the epitome of this is like our love fest portion of the podcast now. but I find that this is the most rewarding kind of relationship outside of familial relationships, that, you know, when you can come together and meet as an intellectual peer and continue the conversation. Like, I learn just as much from you as you just said that you may take away from me. And I think the fact that we have these overlaps of like being interested in poetry, being interested in current events, you know, obviously the arts, like domesticity, the wilderness, like all, you know, eco-philosophy, like all of these things can, and you don't find that with every, I mean, as you know, like individuals or whatever, but like, I think the roles, I'm just going to dip into this now, but
yes,
I think
please.
Like the role of you as a curator and me as an artist is a very, it's a very singular kind of relationship, because while it is a professional relationship, there are so many possibilities there to kind of explore things in a space that is, okay, it's defined on one level, but mm-hmm. then it can become gray in terms of where the conversation leads and the kinds of ideas that are generated that just continue to evolve and kind of expand understanding of you know, the human condition to a certain extent. And that happens in the best cases. It doesn't happen all the time, but it's happened a few times in my life. And I feel so grateful to have that because, I mean, it's a place of mutual understanding. You're coming together with this commonality, this common understanding. Or you would think it's a common understanding. You don't really know until you start talking
sure.
together. But there's this premise of a commonality of like cause and appreciation, you know, like a level of appreciation. But mm-hmm. I don't know if you agree with that. But
I do agree. But I also agree that it's not always the case.
Mm-hmm.
And that so far this experience in working together has been so rich for it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, I mean, it just depends on a variety of factors, the type of exhibition for me, like the type of exhibition that I'm mm-hmm. curating, where the artists are living or how much they're going to be involved. If it's a group show, then
totally
mostly the artists
dynamic.
Aren't going to be involved because
right.
we could never have that kind of input or collaboration with so many people.
Exactly.
But having the opportunity to work on a solo show with you at MAD, which opens next spring, amazingly, has been a whole nother experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done solo shows before that haven't been like this either. So
mm-hmm.
I agree in your response that it's so rich and rare, and I'm really like loving the process mm-hmm. because of it.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
I mean, I do feel as an artist in and your role as a curator within, you know, within this particular circumstance, like it is critical for me to know that you at least, if nothing else, I mean, we go above and beyond that, but like that you truly understand the work on a certain level, not necessarily completely in the way that I'm thinking about the work, but the kinds of ways that you think about the work are something, you know, like that is important, I think, in
sure.
terms of a working.
You want to be represented in a certain way, the way that you feel about your work.
Right.
I feel for me, it's a great responsibility in sharing artists' work. Like I take it seriously and
mm-hmm.
I'm grateful that you're willing to put your work in my hands and that we can work together to build a relationship of trust between us, because I think it is important. I don't know what it's like for you as the artist to create this work. And then, like you said before, you send it out into the world and it has its own life.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine to a certain extent, you want to be sure that that work will be cared for, not only physically, but also intellectually.
I mean,
maybe I'm going
yes
too far
no.
with it.
I mean, yes and no. I mean, it's, you know, at this point in my career, like I've been practicing for over 20 years. And of course, I never knew at the beginning when I was beginning to make work, whether or not it would be valued or have any perceived value of any, I'm not talking about financial value, just
mm-hmm.
like any kind of place in the realm of critical thinking, or, you know, I was following my thread and I continue to do that. But it is funny, like at this point, I'm like, oh, I do care.
You know,
I mean, I care, but this goes back to that, you know, it goes back to that question of like maybe the futility of making, right? Right. Like, yes, I do care. Like, it's, I feel very fortunate that the work has found its way into institutions and that it's has value. But like 1,000 years from now, if humans aren't here, like what does, what, you know, it is interesting to say that that glass in particular, since we were just talking about that particular material, will be one of the absolute last possible things that would be recognizable from the human species that, that would would hold its form that was given to it by humans. So I think about that too, right? Like when everything else is completely disintegrated or fossilized or whatever, you know, some alien comes and just he starts digging around in the dirt, they may find glass that has a form of some kind, like some cultural object left behind by us. I think that's fascinating.
I think it's fascinating too. So I agree, the futility of us trying to leave some kind of a mark. But I also can't help it. Like, I do feel like it's something that we almost can't help. This is
reminding. Is that what you mean?
The making, yeah. The thinking about what will be here when we're gone, even when we are gone, whether or not.
Legacy issues.
Legacy issues, yeah. I guess. I don't know. And I'm sure, you know, we all deal with our own kind of legacy issues from an ego position, mm-hmm. but then also just from, I'm fascinated that we can see what people's lives before us were based on the things that they've left behind, mm-hmm. whether it's archaeological remains in the Middle East or, you know, China from the 18th century that's right. at a historic house. It's telling us a piece of the story of our humanity. Mm-hmm. And I think that my interest in issues of legacy really stems from the interest in looking behind, if that makes
mm-hmm.
sense.
Mm-hmm. History.
Yeah.
Which is linked to time. Here we are again.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I am a total history geek. I mean, I think I could have just gone down the historian road completely as well. Because I do. And just how much is lost. Right, like in terms of a narrative or a thread, and what is perceived as valuable. I just started listening to Jill Lepore's, I guess it's a biography on Jane Franklin, which was just like, oh, it's just the most incredible. She's amazing anyway. She's absolutely amazing. But I mean, just thinking about like Jane, she has just a handful of letters that were preserved in one little book that she made, and that's it from her life, right? So just kind of figuring out who that person was, who Benjamin's sister was, one of his most beloved sister. But I just think, yes, I mean, yes to history, yes to material culture, you know, because also I think we look like we're living, like the immediacy of our age, we're forgetting. We're forgetting about the history of like the cup, right? Or choose something, the blanket or the watch or, you know, all of these, all of this inherent kind of symbolism and content that, that informs who we are as people, how we move through the world is being piled on and saturated by the digital age that we're now transitioning into. We're kind of like, it's not enough to just have an object in space that's sitting without moving. You know what I mean? Like a very static object. I'm saying static object. That's what I'm going for here, is just this, you know, it's almost too quiet.
Mm-hmm.
for people to notice anymore. And yet I don't feel fulfilled by the, you know, a moving image as much as you know, of course, it probably had, I know it had a complete sense of wonder when we first had moving images. Like it would have pulled as, you know, far, far past anything a glass, piece of glass would pull. But now it's, we're constantly being bombarded, you know, we have mm-hmm. YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So
the spectacle of it has become so normal
mm-hmm.
that it is meaningless in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's as satisfying as the real physical world around us. I don't know. I feel like I'm constantly reading things about how the digital aspect of our lives, which is so ingrained in our, it is part of our life. And when I step back and think of it like that, it's almost alarming.
It's like, how soon after you wake up do you pick up your phone?
Right. The answer is always too soon.
Before you go to the bathroom? Like, it is like a real thing.
It's a real problem, I think.
It's a little bit of a problem. I took a short errand this week before coming here, and I forgot my phone, and I literally did not have it for a half an hour, and I had to like back myself back down off the, you know, like, what if they need to get a hold of me in the half hour errand? You know, I went into this kind of weirdly neurotic space, and then you know that you have an addiction problem. And I am not even on social media that much. Mm-hmm. I don't use it as frequently as the majority of my friends do.
Sure,
and I
yeah.
still am like freaking out that I left my phone at home for a half an hour or something. So that's, so then what does that mean in our relationship to other things around us if that's the thing that is predominant? Sometimes I have people ask me, do you put technology, you know, of course, books are technology too, right? Which are now artifacts. But do you put technology, I'm air quoting for those of you who can't see me, which is everyone, into your compositions? I'm like, well, that would be the most specific kind of dated thing that I could ever possibly do is stick a phone or, you know, at the time they were asking me, it was the iPod. So
right, which is would be meaningless now.
Exactly. You know, so that's interesting. I mean, other people do that with success, but I try to maintain almost like a more of a universal, I can say that, but it's really a Western focused universal approach to the compositions that everyone could come into in a way.
This series is supported by the Paulette Krasner Foundation, established in 1985 for the sole purpose of providing financial assistance to individual visual artists. Each artist in this series has benefited from the generosity of the Paulette Krasner Foundation through their grant program. The Artist Perspectives podcast series is just one way that Art Table works to support all women in the arts. To find out more about our initiatives for the advancement of women's leadership, please visit us at arttable.org.